Taco Palenque fans, we have something special for you. Try the Casero Taco now for only $2.75 Monday through Thursday. Flavor packed with premium sirloin rice and refried beans. Only at Taco Palenque. At participating locations for limited time, not valid for delivery. Other restrictions may apply.
From a highly secure network of top secret locations across South Texas, this is the Spurs Insider, brought to you by Taco Palenque. I am Mike Finger, joined as always by our Express News panel of beat writers, Tom Orsborn and Jeff McDonald, and sports editor Nick Talbot. We left you last week on a positive note, as we so often do on this show, which has been hailed by fans of Tony Robbins as one of the most uplifting podcasts on the internet. But we have to begin this week with a bit of a concession, a bit of a downer. As it turns out, the local cagers will not have us working into June as we'd expected all season. Tom, what is your reaction to the news that the Spurs have been mathematically eliminated? I know it's a shock, but mathematically eliminated from the play-in / playoff race this year.
Recount. Recount.
That's true. Yeah. We could send this all the way to the Supreme Court if we need to.
That's right.
Somewhere.
Yeah. They're playing well. I mean, it seems like if you just go by anecdotal evidence of how excited people are in the crowd, I mean, if you can get crowds like that, how could they not win? I don't know.
Well,
it is true though. At the end of last week, when the Spurs were on a two-game winning streak, it was like, could they do it? Could they pull this out? Could they go all the way? But alas, they're in last place in the West and didn't quite get there. But Jeff can speak to this. He was on the most recent road trip where they nearly won a game at Sacramento, went right down to the wire, and then just bulldozed the Golden State Warriors in San Francisco. They're playing much better.
Yeah, they're actually playing much better since getting back from the rodeo road trip. I guess it's 3-3 now is the record, which mathematically is much better than the rest of the season. And even the eye test, except for that game against Houston, where it was just a clunker, and that 5-minute stretch at home against the Warriors, they look pretty good.
What do you think goes into that?
That's a good question. I don't know. It's a lot of things clicking. I think when you compare the coming home from the rodeo trip to the end of the rodeo trip, I think the end of the rodeo trip, they were just dog tired. I mean, that rodeo trip is not for the faint of heart. And I think maybe as we've gotten farther away from the Tim, Tony, and Manu era, it's maybe provided a bit of perspective on just how insane that was, that team was able to mentally navigate that rodeo trip so successfully for 15 years or whatever, never having a losing rodeo trip. Because you see the younger teams that come in that aren't used to it, that don't have, maybe don't just don't have that wherewithal, that mental toughness, and they get crushed by the end of it. And we saw that at the end of the rodeo trip. And then when they got back, they looked really just rejuvenated. It was almost like a weight lifted, like that thing's over. And they just looked, they had a little bit more of a pep in their step, you might say. And it's borne out on the court. I mean, that victory at Golden State and the near victory at Sacramento came without Victor Wembanyama even on the floor. And the one in Golden State came without Victor and Devin Vassell. So it's a lot of people playing well all at once. And, you know, why that's happening now and not earlier, I don't know. Experience, just getting used to each other, getting used to some guys that weren't used to playing, getting used to playing. I don't know. Will it keep up for the final 6 weeks of the season? I don't know. But it's been nice to see over the last couple of weeks, at least.
I think there are a couple of factors at play, and one of them, and this is not to diminish how well the Spurs without Victor Wembanyama played on that most recent road trip, but friend of the podcast Sean Elliott brings this up a lot during the broadcast, and that when these Spurs this season play with Victor Wembanyama in the lineup,
they are getting everybody's, like, people aren't taking them lightly like they have in the past. And when he's out, maybe that dynamic isn't as much in play. And the Spurs, who played quite well in Sacramento and San Francisco, probably benefited a little from that, in that the Warriors probably weren't as up for the Spurs as they would have been with Victor in the lineup. Sacramento probably the same way. But to give credit where credit's due, the Spurs have played really well with Victor too. Got the two victories at home last week against Oklahoma City and Indiana. Played pretty well in that second game against Golden State. As Jeff said, there was a 5-minute stretch that doomed them, as it so often does. So I think there's positives to be found, even if you can find, I guess, some asterisk, some caveat.
Two factors. They're just almost inexplicably shooting the ball better. Like, they're the worst 3-point shooting in the entire world heading into the All-Star break, and coming out, they're one of the best shooting 3-point shooting teams in the NBA. What goes into that? Is that just variance? Is that just open shots people were not making for a whole 2/3 of the season, all of a sudden going down for the last 2 weeks? And we're seeing like guys like Malachi Branham, who struggled a lot with his 3-ball, all of a sudden being just Steph Curry. Zach Collins, a guy that struggled with his 3-ball, all of a sudden just can't miss. Is it luck? Is it just good fortune? Is it the worm turning? That's one factor. The other thing is they're playing better defense than they were going to the All-Star break. They actually have had a passable defense, both on paper and via the eye test, since coming back from the break. And that's maybe one thing that might be more sustainable. Like, you have more control over that than you do whether shots go down. So those are the two factors, I think, that have fueled this stretch of 500 ball.
Tomas?
Yep, the clock struck midnight Monday night against the Warriors. Malachi, 1 of 8, 0 for 4 from 3-point range. Other guys struggled that had been playing well. So, you know, they just kind of reverted back to form. The third quarter blues, as Jeff mentioned, that five-minute drought, that resurfaced. Just when you think maybe they got some consistency, turned the corner consistency wise, they're back to struggling again. And
progress is not linear.
Yeah.
Tom, I'm not gonna do something really, really ignorant and ask you what went wrong during that 5-minute stretch.
No.
Because as we all know, when things go wrong for 5-minute stretches, we can probably figure it out on our own. We're smart people.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. I heard that last night. I woke up, 5 o'clock this morning thinking about that.
Did you really?
Yes, I did, as I often do.
Why would you ask?
That's sick.
I know. Why would you,
that's sick.
That, hey, that's my life. Yeah.
Why would you ask a coach what went wrong during a 5-minute stretch when they got outplayed? When a reporter could figure it out for himself if they just watched the game.
And the next question to him was, "Are you going to talk? Are you going to talk to Victor?" And
Devin? Why would he not talk to Victor? He talks to Devin Vassell too.
Yeah.
Anyway,
on and fun. On.
Yeah, on and on. There should be said, we're making fun of the venerable head coach of the Spurs a little here. There can be challenging Greg Popovich press conferences, and there can be delightful ones. You often don't know which one's coming, and makes it fun.
You think that's fun? You're also sick.
We're trying to live up to our reputation as a self-help, positive, confidence building podcast. That's why people tune in every week from around the world, from nations near and far, and we appreciate them. So yeah, it can be fun. Challenges can be fun, Jeff McDonald. Challenges can be fun. One person who exemplifies that, by the way, and I want to make sure to point this out, because so often we talk about players' shortcomings and players, especially the past few years, on this team that has not played at anything really close to a playoff level. I just want to say that I've been kind of impressed with Malachi Branham on and off the floor lately. He's a guy who had a rough stretch early in the season and actually fell out of the playing rotation at one point for a couple of mental mistakes, not shooting as well on down the line. He's played really well lately for the most part. And this sounds cliche. It sounds like the old sports writer, you know, caring too much about who talks to you and who doesn't. But and I want to have Jeff speak to this too. He played maybe what was on the way to the best game of his life at Sacramento. Really, really great all-around floor game. And pretty much blew it in the final seconds. Like, it wasn't entirely his fault. It seemed, talking to Trey Jones, talking to players, there was some miscommunication as to what the play was. So it's not all on Malachi Branham, but he did commit the turnover that blew the game. And of all the people in the locker room after that game, he was the one most willing and eager to talk about it and to acknowledge that he messed up. And I think there's something to that. I don't mind praising guys when they're accountable. And then he came back and played a really good game against Golden State in the victory. So I think there have been some encouraging signs from him, among other players on this team this season.
If you want to talk about that moment in the locker room as sort of a sign of mental growth or mental maturity, I think that's a good example of it. Some of us maybe forget that these guys are 20 years old and they've never been in the situation of being scrutinized to quite this degree. And they also don't really have the luxury that maybe a 20-year-old in the Spurs locker room 10 years ago might have had. Yep. And seeing how, you know, Manu Ginobili talks to the media even after he has a bad game, or Tim Duncan, God help him, might not show up when he scores 30, but if he scores 8 and the Spurs get beat, he's right there in front of the media to take the questions. Tony Parker, same way. These guys don't really have that sort of role model example. So when you do have a moment like Malachi had, where he you know, on the surface blew the game, it was good to see him, you know, step up and take questions from you and I, and not be defensive about it. I think that's one thing maybe the younger players can learn. If you just own it, if you don't get defensive about it, it goes a lot better for you, and people have they're more understanding of it, I think. If you just step up and say, hey, I shouldn't have made that pass. I if I could take it back, I would. And then it's over. Yeah. You know, we're not going to drag it out or beat you over the head with it or tell everybody you're a bad player because of one play, you know? So I think it was a sign of this, at least one player on this team, kind of taking a growing step. Maybe we're making too much of it. I don't know. But I definitely saw that and clocked that when it happened. You know, you didn't know walking in there if Malachi was going to talk about it or act like you were a jerk for asking or anything. But we had a nice conversation with him about that and other topics, and that's kind of the way it should be.
Yeah. And I guess just to expand on that night, it's going to be almost a week ago once this podcast hits our listeners' ears. But I think those two games back-to-back, and even though Victor Wembanyama wasn't on that trip, we can talk about his injury status and his sort of story in a little bit. But those two games back-to-back without Victor around, I think were pretty important for this team's growth. To have played that well in a game that they were supposed to get blown out in at Sacramento, and to be that close, and then to kind of have it fall apart at the end, that was brutal. That was really brutal. And it wasn't all Malachi Branham's fault. Trey Jones, who was on the sideline at that time, had said he didn't think that everybody on the floor understood what the play was. There was some confusion. To rehash, the Kings had tied it In the final 20, I know it was the last 24 seconds because the shot clock was off. The Spurs came running up the court. They did not have a true point guard on the floor. Trey was on the sideline.
Well, and, hold on. Yeah. But it was just a shame they didn't have a timeout to use in that situation.
Well, that's what I'm getting into.
So much working against them.
The Spurs had a timeout left, elected not to take it, and there was sort of confusion. And Pop is on the sideline kind of waving Zach Collins over to set a screen for Malachi. They'd run that play a few times in the game. Malachi, I think he mentioned to us after the game, he should have known that situation if there wasn't the proper separation, if there wasn't the proper look, he shouldn't have thrown the ball. He did. And Sabonis just made an unbelievable play. a big man to make that steal way out at the top of the key, almost near midcourt, and then break out for a layup to take the lead. That a situation where the Spurs should have had the last shot, and the worst situation should have been overtime. Now they're down by two, looking for a last second heave to win it, and they obviously didn't get it. To endure that, and that was clearly a screw up by somebody, maybe by lots of bodies,
by lots of people. And like I understand not preferring not to call timeout and have to run something against a set defense. Like I understand that being the first idea, but when things are going awry and like your first idea is clearly about to blow up in your face, and you still have eight seconds, 9 seconds, 10 seconds left, mm-hmm. I think that's exactly what that timeout is for.
Yeah,
like call the timeout, set something up. If you don't get a good shot or make a good shot out of that, you go to overtime. But just letting the guys play it out, I understand that. I understand letting them play it out sometimes, but knowing when to pull the plug on the playing it out, when you don't have a point guard on the floor and the play's getting blown up and half the guys aren't running it right, that seems what that timeout's for. But anyway.
It happened. I think that wasn't that the case in Cleveland? That road loss in Cleveland that was botched. I think they had a timeout there to use.
Was that when Sohan threw the ball out of bounds?
Correct. Yes. Ball had a timeout there and Pop chose not to use it. Correct.
I just think when like guys on the sideline are watching and going, wow, like nobody knows what's going on.
Yeah.
That's where you need to call the timeout.
Anyway. Yeah.
Of course, plays coming out of timeout haven't gone so well.
That's the other thing. That might be why you're through, but
damned if you do, damned if you don't.
I mean, well, you were double damned if you don't in that situation because they threw it away for a dunk.
Yeah,
a lot of people probably thought they should have called that timeout. That's what I mean. Jeff thought I was watching the same thing. It just seemed odd, especially when you didn't have Trey out there.
Yeah,
was questionable anyway.
A lot of things go wrong in games.
Yeah, probably figure it out for yourself.
Figure it out.
The where I was going with that is that I think that was just brutal. That was not fun. Pop after that game, that was not fun. A lot of people after that game, and then you go to Golden State, and even though Steph Curry is out, and even though it's not the Golden State, of the dynasty of the last decade, it's still a pretty good team. And not only are you without Victor Wembanyama, it turns out before the game starts that Devin Vassell is not playing in this game. So you're without your two best players, basically. In the last game of a road trip where everybody could be expected to say, we're 12.5 point underdogs. Let's just get the heck out of here and get back home. Up in the press row at the Chase Center, the sparkling Chase Center, the lovely Chase Center, where we always feel welcome. The great, great place to watch a game, cover a game. I think I'd mentioned to Jeff McDonald that even though the point spread was 12.5, I might make it 17.5, and I might still take the Golden State Warriors because why would the Spurs compete in this game? What evidence is there that this could be a good game?
And for the record, I took the points from the very beginning. Spurs and the points from tip-off.
I don't know about that.
Yes. Hold on. You proposed that to me, and I said I would take the Spurs and the points.
Okay. I'm not okay.
Because you know, for reasons we sort of alluded to, why would Golden State compete? They have no reason.
Yeah, you clearly were right.
Clearly. Can we get like a, I guess that's not a screen grab, but like a clip of that? Can that be the clip from this?
Sure.
This one, you telling me that I'm right?
Sure.
For once?
You were right.
Thank you.
You were right. Because the Spurs played inspired, the Golden State Warriors did not. And much in the same way the Spurs kind of gave it to the Kings two nights earlier for 3.5 quarters, they did it to the Warriors. And this time they just pulled away. And who were the stars in that game? You had a nice game from Jeremy Sochan, but the game story in the Express News print edition and online by our great, great, often correct beat writer, Jeff McDonald, focused on the grocery store bagger, former alleged HEB employee Dominic Barlow, in his first career podium game, in which I'll let Jeff tell the story that he told so, so well in the print edition of the Express News the next day about Dom Barlow coming to talk to us.
Well, I mean, can we get this guy on the HEB commercials? Like, it just seems... It seems like an obvious fit.
We'll remind the viewers / listeners who have heard the story. Some of our most dedicated listeners have heard this story before, but remind them where the HEB origin story came from.
It was a running pop punchline last year. Every so often, Pop will stumble on something that gets a laugh in one market, and then he'll be asked a similar question in another market.
Like this podcast, we go back to the same tropes over and over again.
He'll go back to that punchline, you know, and, you know, those of us that have been following them around and kind of roll our eyes, we've heard it before, but everyone laughs again. It's like, I mean, it's very much like following Richard Pryor around the country. You know, you get used to the same punchlines. They don't hit as hard.
Except sometimes Richard Pryor yells at you for some reason. Anyway. Yes,
cursing, lots of cursing.
Yes.
Anyway. Well, it was last year when people would just ask about Dominic Barlow, who was on a two-way contract, and every so often he'd come up and play a few minutes and look competent. And Bob would always say, like, I don't even know where the front office found this guy. I asked, was he bagging groceries at HEB? And everyone would laugh. And I remember asking Dominic Barlow about that. He thought it was funny too. But he did not come from HEB. He came from Overtime Elite in Atlanta, which might as well be the same thing. OTE, HEB.
Yep.
You know, as far as
but Saturday he came into the post game interview room after a hell of a performance. Is that right?
After a heck of a what are you Richard Pryor all of a sudden?
Well,
I got
caught up in the moment.
Yeah, what was it? 19 points, season high.
Mm-hmm.
And was just all over the place. Bunch of rebounds. Like he's nine. I think it was eight rebounds. A couple block and a steal. Like he was all over the place. He was playing his heart out.
Yeah, playing his heart out. And so,
I mean, that's how you win games like that, is guys like Dominic Barlow. And I think Julian Champagne had a season high, too. Like, I don't think those guys were really on the Warriors, like, you got to shut these guys down, you know, list. So when you have guys like that step up, that's how you win those games. Anyway, what was your question about Dominic Barlow?
His first podium game.
Yeah, he had his first podium game. What about it?
He did a mic check.
He did do a mic check. Because as you do.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
He's his own roadie.
You wrote that much better in the paper than you described it on the podcast.
I write
you're
better
a
than
print journalist.
I write better than I talk.
Yeah, I write better than I talk. Hey, we're gonna wind down, but that reminds me of I know we're supposed to finish uplifting, and we will, but just an annoying thing that was brought up again yesterday. I wrote about very, very delightful conversation I had with Draymond Green of the Golden State Warriors about Jeremy Sochan and how much he likes Jeremy. He likes the fact that Jeremy told us that he wants to be Draymond Green and more than Draymond Green. He likes that Jeremy doesn't give a bleep about what people think, which is very Draymond Greenish. He likes that people compare them in the way that they defend and the way they sort of see the floor and want to get their teammates involved. It was really nice. And two guys who are kind of known as really annoying antagonists, instigators. Both are similar in that.
I see why you like them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I like those guys. Anyway, there's this thing where people are like, where's the video of this interview? you know? And that's just, as an old, I'm an old man, that just, it drives me crazy. Because, you know, much like Jeff McDonald, the reason I make the big bucks, the reason I'm able to pay the rent is because, you know, you write. We write stuff people like to read. And, you know, come on, read a little, America.
I think people have gotten...
not everything has to be a TikTok clip.
Yeah.
And just, this is inside journalism that I'm not sure how many of our listeners care about, but like the best conversations are the ones that are just between two human beings, where you're not holding up a camera in front of their face and asking someone to perform. And I think just as using that as one example, I don't think Draymond would have been nearly as interesting if between us, I was holding up a cell phone, like, you know, expecting him to perform. And so, this is an old man ranting or an old man ruminating on stuff that people might not care about. But I miss those days when you could just sit and have a conversation with a player or a coach or whatever.
People do one of two things when you put a camera in their face. They either get way too guarded and clam up, or yep. they go the other way and feel like they have to ham it up and be yep. performative and perform. And neither one of those are optimal.
Right.
The first one, you don't get really any information. And the second one is not genuine.
Yep.
So I don't like all this stuff being like, I don't like all this stuff being on the podium. Like Dominic Barlow was great and I'm glad he had his moment. It would have yep. it probably would have been a better interview. I mean, it was a fine interview. We got great stuff out of it, but it would have been even better if we just talked to him like a human off to the side.
Well, there's you can have a combination of both. And
for sure. That's the world we live in.
And I want to shout out to, for those of you who care about more sports in San Antonio than just the Spurs, if you care about like high school sports, things that are going on around the community, like Ron Herod is a young journalist that has been with us for a year or so. And he's done amazing things. He won an award for some of his video coverage of high school sports. And David Hinojosa is joining in on that. They do great stuff talking to high school athletes on Instagram and TikTok and that type of stuff.
They're great.
There's places for that, but I think that...
I think you just contradicted everything we just said.
Well, no. My point is that you can do a little bit of both. And if you see... the Ron in the car, you don't demand, well, where's the print version of this? And if you see a print version of Draymond Green interviews, like, I don't see why you have to say, where's the video? I don't care about this unless there's a video. You know what I mean? Like there can be both. And you know, we're talking about this on a podcast. This isn't a in the newspaper roundtable.
Why not? Can we get a transcript of this and print it in the newspaper?
Maybe we should. I guess if we're going to leave this, and Tom, you can jump in before. Do you have anything to add before my big finish?
Speaking of reading, sports editor Nick Talbot, I know you'll take note of this. I noticed that Victor is plowing his way through another Brandon Sanderson novel.
Which one this time?
No, it was, I saw it in his locker last night. It's in French. So
that would make it harder.
I didn't quite get the title, but it's a thick one. It's another thick one. And he just finished that Stephen King thick one, and he's off to another one. So kids, be like Victor. Read these thick novels.
Was it Cujo?
It was the Gunslinger. It was my favorite.
Genre. Read. Find something you like, kids, and read.
And get your nose out of those darn comic books.
And Stephen King novels famously never adapted to the cinema, so you got to read them. There's no movies available of Stephen King.
The Stephen King Gunslinger one is terrible, though. You read the books. The book's amazing. Now the great opening line. I highly recommend.
About Shawshank Redemption. That was a novella, and
all the good Stephen King. We're getting way off topic here. All the good Stephen King ones movies are usually off his novella. Stand By Me, Shawshank Redemption. You know, it's really hard to adapt the longer ones. Anyway,
Weekend at Bernie's.
Big Stephen King fan, read most of the books, obviously. So,
was he the guy that wrote Weekend at Bernie's?
Yeah, definitely wrote Weekend at Bernie's.
He wrote Weekend at Bernie's 2. He didn't write the first one. No one's that talented.
Yeah. So anyway, as we leave you for next week, we didn't even get to before we leave the Victor Wembanyama update. He was
Wait, I just thought of something. Can I say one thing?
Uh-huh.
How was there a weekend at Bernie's too? Like it happened again. They pulled off the same scam with their dead boss twice.
There was a Home Alone too, bro.
Well, that's just bad parenting. I get
they
it.
Left. They left that poor kid.
There are more than two times.
Well, yeah. Come on, man.
The second Home Alone, it was his. He ran off. It's his fault. It's little Kevin McAllister's fault.
I'm looking forward
seriously,
to
Oppenheimer how do you pull off the same scam with your dead boss twice? Like it seems like the second time people would be like, oh no, I bet he's dead this time. We remember, guys.
You clearly didn't watch Weekend at Bernie's 2. It was explained in the film, in the subtext.
Well, I guess I'm the moron that didn't see Weekend at Bernie's 2.
The Victor Wembanyama update, he missed those games after some various bangs and bruises in that Houston loss. Missed both West Coast games, probably could have played if it was the NBA Finals. But one thing that was funny about that is you just think about the logistics of it all. They played a game in Houston, then were set to fly to Sacramento, followed that with a bus trip to San Francisco. And what they did after that Houston game was send him back to San Antonio because they didn't want to make him fly across the country. They wanted the Spurs medical staff to look at him. So they sent him back to San Antonio in a Sprinter van, which seems great. And he could have joined the team on the West Coast after seeing the doctors in San Antonio that morning. But think about it. How are you going to get a 7'4" guy to Sacramento, San Francisco? You can't. Victor Wembanyama cannot fly commercial.
I got two words for you. Business select.
Business select on Southwest. He might get that tall seat in the exit row, but that's still that might create a bit of a furor in the age of social media that those Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Monta Ginobili, Danny Green guys didn't create back when they famously flew Southwest from Miami to San Antonio, more than 10 years ago? So it's basically hard. It's a task to transport Victor Wembanyama from San Antonio to Sacramento on his own. It was like, you can't fly him commercial. Do you rent out a charter just for him and spend that expense, or did you just let him take it easy for a few days in San Antonio? That's what they did. He came back, played great against Golden State in that loss on Monday. We're taping this before the game on Tuesday against Houston, but I think he's expected to play. We're not sure that he might have a minutes restriction. Maybe on the second night of a back-to-back he won't play, but he mentioned after Monday night's game that he still intends to play as many games as he can through the end of the season, even though he's set to play in the Olympics this summer. No thoughts of shutting him down. So we covered that. Anything to add there before I wrap it up?
Soup to nuts.
Soup to nuts. We did it soup to nuts. And, you know, it's good. It's good. You listen to the podcast. You can read us in the expressnews.com on the Express News print edition. Many, many ways to enjoy all of us on this uplifting, positive podcast. We encourage you to do it in all sorts of ways. And all our colleagues across this fine nation, around this wonderful world. Support journalism in all of its forms. And until we see you next time, take care of each other and keep it real.
And eat taco palenque.
There you go.